are you going to stay out of this matter of how we pay back on the unemployment compensation?
Just oh, no. Oh, no. We've tried to knock their heads together. That is labor and management. We've run into a hurdle, and it's a hurdle that may not be either side's fault in terms of federal requirements on what can be done. Here's the bottom line. The feds will fix it for us if we don't.
Right. But you don't want that.
No, I prefer for us to solve our own problems. But ultimately, if we can't get management and labor together on something that's agreeable to get done, and with the kind of fractured nature of what you can expect in this legislature, the feds will take care of it for us. So am I staying out of it? No. Is it a top priority for me to go follow my sword when I know the feds are going to take care of it? If we can't get the parties together and save it themselves?
And that the feds will take care of it ought to be a sufficient hammer on the parties.
I would think.
Ethics reform. That percolates out of some of the Republicans, a couple of columnists.
Percolates out of me.
Does it? To what end?
I spoke, I think, on my last Steve Barnes television show.
I missed it.
I'm sorry. But
must have been during the holidays.
It was in November, I think, after the election, I thought a two-year waiting period for legislators to become lobbyists was good public policy and something that I would support. What I've been real careful here, and then again, this goes back to my days in the Senate, I tell them privately what I think, and I think there ought to be some significant reform, that being one of them. But I remembered that internally, when governors stuck their nose into the internal operation of the Senate, or what we perceived to be the internal operation, it often was counterproductive. So I'm more effective if I can privately talk to them and say, you guys ought to do this.
Have you privately talked about what they ought to do in terms of the lobbyist-legislator direct relationship, in terms of reporting what is spent, limiting further what is spent on entertaining? Is that something that you've also kind of receptive to in your private moments?
Sure, I'm receptive to it. I'm receptive to limiting the amount of money that that lobbyists spend on legislators. I'm receptive to limiting the amount of money legislators draw for
expenses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you let this be known in a
Well, obviously, you're letting it be known now on TV.
No, but I'm talking, I know, but you're saying this is the legislature's business, and I must be careful appearing to tell them how to be ethical, is what I hear.
It's all of our business,
right.
And I don't shy from that responsibility. But the legislature is a culture that is most effectively spurred to change in its own behavior when they are encouraged to do it from within rather than being dictated to from without. That's been my experience, both as a legislator and watching them.
One more in this regard, I'm obliged to ask. Would a Walmart rule in legislator-lobbyist relations work? By which I mean
Would it work? Sure. Would there be some cheating? I'm sure there would. Would the consequences of that cheating be important in terms of enforcing it going forward? I think so.
Well, still, a young man in your manner and vigor. You're what, 65 years old?
64, yesterday.
65 by the time this airs. Just started
your... No. Oh. I'm 64 by the time this airs.
Oh, forgive me, I gave you an extra year. Sorry.
I turned 64 yesterday.
Yesterday, okay, 64. And you've just been elected to the second and last term as governor of the state with an overwhelming majority, a mandate. Are you beginning to think more about your place in history, the legacy that you leave, whether you're sufficiently using your political capital to do all that you might ought to do? Are these things that have begun to permeate your thinking?
Oh, I think all of us, recognizing our own mortality, from time to time, think about our legacy, whether it's a political legacy or business legacy or personal legacy. So, from time to time, those thoughts creep into my head. More often than not, I've always been a better tactician than I have been a strategist. I've always been better on the battlefield than I was back at the map.
You mean you work better?
I mean my concentration is more on what do we do tomorrow to make things better? What specifically do we apply and improve the quality of our people's lives? How do we build our state? By its very nature, that requires some degree of strategy. And in my regard, that strategy has encompassed two major themes, and I still believe that today: education and economic development. And those two big strategic corners, if you will, in my opinion, form what I'm all about as far as my time as governor is concerned. Every time we improve every aspect of education, or every component, or each component, or any component, it's a building block to what I want our state to become. And every time we create more and better jobs, or a better place for jobs, or a better opportunity for people to stay here or come here and get good jobs, it's another component in what I think is a legacy, or what I think is a strategic thought on my part. Having said that, then my time is consumed day to day with the actual action pieces, tactically, to how do you make that happen? How do we change tax laws, if at all? What do we do specifically to change the delivery of education? What do we change funding-wise? What do we change accountability-wise? How do we raise the bar? Those are all more specific, tactical, hands-on approaches to effectuate those two strategic goals of improving education and economic development.
So after a year gone, and we're jumping 4 years ahead, and if I was, we're still writing columns, we can hope that I will be. And I said, you know, in his time as governor, school performance got better in the state and the economy improved. And third, we did away with the regressive grocery tax. That's sort of what you're aiming for. I mean, it's these general betterment in those two areas and other things.
I think betterment in those two areas, and I'm not limiting this now to K through 12. Improvement in those two areas will cause all the other things to be better. It'll cause healthcare to be better. It'll cause nutrition to be better. It'll cause tolerance and social justice to be better. It'll cause inclusiveness and attacking bias. It'll cause all the high-minded social things that you probably believe and I probably believe our people need to embrace and encompass more to be more realistic in terms of their accomplishments by our people. When we raise education levels and education quality, and when we create the kind of jobs that cause folks to have that kind of ability to support themselves and their families, all those other things are easier to solve. Healthcare is easier to solve. Healthcare prevention.
I think I'll close with this, not to be contentious, but just ask it.
You can't not do this without at least having some portion of it contentious.
Well,
or they're not going to believe you're Brummett. They're going to think there's somebody sitting over there with a mask.
There are those who say, and I don't necessarily agree with this, but there are those who say, I'm not calling their names, and you just trust me that they say it, they. You know, B.B., bright guy, knows the government, tremendous approval ratings, has this, quote, political capital. He's just done spend. He's just by nature more conciliatory and timid. He looks for the transactional change rather than the transformational change. You don't do all that you could do or might think that you ought to do. How do you respond to any of that thought?
Well, I'm glad you are not somebody who's made those characterizations, because I wouldn't want to insult you in my answer or be contentious to
you. Nor would I want you to.
But what I would say to those folks who would say that is what Teddy Roosevelt basically said, that the real honor goes to the person in the arena. All these Monday morning quarterbacks, all these pundits, all these folks that sit on the sideline and don't have the courage or the job to actually go do something, to actually go fix a problem or change. The folks that just, you said it better than anybody I ever heard say it. You said columnists, and you said this at the Arlington Hotel. It stuck with me forever. You were making a speech, and you said a columnist is like the guy that goes to the battlefield the day after the battle and shoots the wounded. Now, we need columnists. So I have a deep respect for what a columnist or an editorialist provides, an opinion writer provides, because I think it's important. It's different from news, and it's important. But some of the people that would say that are in the category of folks who have never been in the arena except the day after the battle. And it's easy for them to shoot the wounded. It's easy for them to make pronouncements. They have never faced whatever the challenge might be. There are things that we take head on boldly. There are things that you try to take indirectly. There are times to charge the front. There are times to flank the enemy. There are times to retreat and go get higher ground in order to be successful tomorrow. If Lee had not decided to go ahead and commit to battle on the second day at Gettysburg, we might have two nations. Thankfully, we don't have two nations. But there are times to charge headlong and times to do something different. I try to know when to do both. I try to encompass both. I'm not worried about whether a columnist wants to accuse me of not being transformational when I could be.